to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence, brought to you by the FNX Network and My Sports. As you can see, they're posted right behind me. I'm your host, Stel, and joining me this evening, well, you're here, Yannickis, how you doing?
Not bad, Jay.
I keep forgetting to introduce you. It's like, you're part of the furniture, I can't help but forget. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good.
You've got a smile on your face, that's the main thing.
Always.
Brilliant, excellent. Now, joining us tonight, we've got two special guests. One is joining us in just a moment, but right now, I'd like to introduce to you, making his debut on Shoot the Defence, he's a former Middlesbrough, Derby and Denmark international striker. He's now a top football agent living in Monaco. Mr. Mikael Beck, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you, and thanks for having me on the show. Yeah,
it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for taking the time out to join us. It's an honour.
No worries.
Brilliant, fantastic. Well, gents, let's talk about the FA Cup, I guess. And there's a 3-4 chance the FA Cup will be heading to London come May as Spurs, Arsenal and Chelsea reach the semi-finals. Spurs and Arsenal brush aside Millwall and Lincoln respectively, while Chelsea knocked out holders Man United in a heated affair, shall we say. Now, the final team making up the quartet is Man City, who comfortably dealt with Middlesbrough 2-0. Mikael, you know, former Borough player yourself, they didn't do themselves any favours with that defensive display, mate. I mean, it's almost as if they gave up when Silva scored after 3 minutes. What do you make of the performance at the weekend?
Well, I mean, first of all, I would like to say that for me, it was really nice to see a more or less full crowd again in the stadium in Middlesbrough. You know, it's been a while that they could fill up the stadium, but it looks like against Man City was more or less full. So that was nice for me to see at least. You know, it looks like the football fever is coming back. You know, to the area and. It's important because it's an area that really needs football, so that was really nice for me to see. Regarding the game itself, I mean, of course we look at the table and we know that Man City is one of the best teams in Europe right now, and Middlesbrough, of course, you know, the table doesn't lie. You know, they are fighting not to get relegated, and hopefully they'll make it in the end. I really hope for them, but of course it was a game that everyone will probably, you know, expect the Man City to win. We know that cup games, especially, you know, with this game being in Middlesbrough, you would fancy, you know, even Middlesbrough to have a good game and maybe even win, because in cup games anything can happen. Yeah. Of course, sometimes it can be good for a game, it can be bad for a game, that one of the teams get an early goal. In this case, it was Man City scoring really early on, and it gave them a lot of confidence, and just, you know, made them play a really good game afterwards. We shouldn't forget that Middlesbrough also had a couple of chances. You know, they could actually have scored just after the goal. You know, from the corner kick, where the Man City keeper, you know, saved brilliantly.
That's right.
But of course, the last half an hour was a strange half an hour, because it was like attack after attack, you know, against the Middlesbrough goal, and in the end, if it hadn't been for Goosen, I think they could have scored 3-4 goals in the last 20-30 minutes. So you would be a little bit disappointed, of course, with the performance, you know, towards the end of the game, but I think, you know, after the 2-0 goal, especially, you know, the game was over, unfortunately, and they stopped playing Middlesbrough, and of course they should, but unfortunately in this game that was the case. You know?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, before we move on to your question, Yannickis, joining us is Mr. Jay Austin from Lucky 7 Management, CEO of Essex TV. Welcome, mate.
You okay? How you doing?
Good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, busy, but I always got time for you guys.
Hey, thank you very much for taking the time out to join us, buddy.
That's all right, anytime.
Thank you very much. Give me 2 seconds, Jay. I'll get your question in just a moment.
Yeah, no worries.
But Mikael mentioned Brad Guzan made a couple of fantastic saves. He did very well to keep the score down, but it just seemed like a warm-up game for Man City, kind of like a preparation for the Champions League game.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, as soon as Silva scored the first goal, for me, the game was over. Middlesbrough don't score goals. I think they're the lowest team in the Premiership regarding goals. They don't ship a lot, but they don't score goals. And against a team like Man City, once they get the noses in front, and yeah, if it went for Guzan, it could have ended up embarrassing for Middlesbrough. But yeah, big game for City tomorrow against Monaco in the Champions League. But they need to take the chances. They can't afford to miss as many chances with Monaco, because we know Monaco are going to score. So it'll be interesting.
Absolutely. Now, Jay, mate, I don't think anyone believed Spurs or Arsenal would slip out. I mean, two professional displays and emphatic scorelines. It's been a pretty straightforward cup run for them this year, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, at the Arsenal game, I was hoping Arsenal would slip up, as every neutral probably did. But it was, in the end, it was second half. They showed their class, really, which was no surprise. And with Spurs, again, they showed their class against Millwall. But it'd be interesting now in the semi-finals how they get on. Both of them, you know, it could end up obviously being a London derby final, couldn't it?
That's right. That's right. It'd be a logistical nightmare for the police.
Oh, that'd be a, they'd have a nightmare, and they couldn't even cope with Spurs Millwall.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. That was a big one as well. Harry Kane, he limped off in the game against Millwall. Yeah. Swollen ankle. Apparently, it's ligament damage. Yeah. Same as against Sunderland. Could be out for 10 weeks, mate.
They're in trouble if they lose him. For me,
yeah.
Son can replace him. I don't know if he's going to be as consistent as what Kane's been this season. We all know about Janssen, you know, one league goal or one goal, so to say, from open play this season as well. But if Kane is missing, I mean, they missed him earlier on in the season and they struggled without Kane. So now to miss him at the latter part of the season, where it's the most crucial time, Tottenham might struggle without him. But they've got good enough players around him that possibly could step up without him being there. So it'll be interesting to see how they cope without him.
Mikhail, how do you think they'll do without Harry Kane? You know, he's in hot form at the moment. England's number one striker. Big loss of Spurs, right?
Yeah, I think it'll be difficult to cope without him. I mean, he's not just a good striker. He's one of the best, maybe the best right now in the league. And he's really on fire at the moment. It's like you could see him score two goals more or less in every game, yeah? So I don't really fancy Jan, to be perfectly honest. Then you also have the South Korean, who I probably, you know, rather see playing than Jan. But of course they have Eriksen, they have good players, but, you know, I think they also play good because Kane is there, and Kane takes a lot of attention from defenders, which creates some space for the other players to score as well, you know. So I think he has such a big importance for the team that I really see him as a big loss for them.
I agree. It's just what Mikhail said about strikers, you know, having more to their game. It's not just about scoring. What about his link-up play? Can he hold the ball up? Can he bring other players into the game? That's why he does it remarkably well. And let's be honest, this is a striker that can score from 20, 25 yards. He's not just a poacher.
He scores all types of goals, Harry Kane.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Mikhail, it's contrasting fortunes for Spurs and Arsenal on and off the pitch. I mean, what do you make of the current situation regarding Wenger's position? And have Spurs got the real deal in Pochettino?
I think I look at it a little bit different than lots of people in England. I really respect Wenger for having been at this club so many years. I like his football. I've always liked it. I like the fact that he takes young players, you know, gambles on them, works with them. But of course, if I was a real Arsenal supporter, of course I want to see titles won, you know, and We have to say they are not winning titles, and they haven't done it for some years now, and of course it's not good enough. I still think someone who has been that many years in a club, I don't think he will get the sack. I think Arsene Wenger will have to go himself if he has to leave. You know, I don't see the club sacking him. That's my personal opinion, anyway. Mm-hmm. Regarding Pochettino, I think he does a really good job, but I just don't see him as a top manager. Not yet, you know. You have to win titles to be a top manager, to become a top manager, and that, you know, Pochettino has not won anything with any teams before, and you know, I think it's the same with players. You know, it's funny, but it's not a pure coincidence that we see the same players always winning titles with different teams, you know. And I think it's a bit the same with managers. happens. You know, you have to. It's something you have to. Either you have it or you don't have it. You know, either you have what it takes to win the crucial games. You know, at the end of the season, and I think, you know, we saw it last season. I'm sorry to say, but I think we might see it again this season that Tottenham would be there, but at the end of the day, they would be with nothing. So I think it's a good manager, but I don't think it's a top manager. I don't think it's a manager that will win something with Tottenham.
I think it's a fair point. Jay, going off subject a little bit, Arsene Wenger, we haven't heard your opinion on him. Obviously, we had your client Paul Manners on last week, and he gave us a bit of an insight into Arsene Wenger. But tell me, I've heard the little rumour, or should I say I've read the rumour, that Arsenal fans have spent about £3,000 on an aeroplane to fly a Wenger out banner at West Brom away. I know Man United did it with David Moyes. You know a thing or two about promoting things. What are these fans doing?
Well, to be fair, if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be rightly frustrated, you know. You know, they seem to settle for fourth place, like for Liverpool. We're disappointed if we settle for fourth. You know, realistically, we're not going to catch Chelsea unless Chelsea have a massive blip. But, you know, we're not settling for fourth. We want at least go for second. Arsenal just seem to be in a comfort zone. Like the Bayern Munich two legs is embarrassing, really, you know. I think he deserves to be sacked just on that two legs, honestly. And I'm being serious, you know. I think he's just stale now. He's gone stale. And then in a position, when does he walk away? He needs to quit on a high. He might win the FA Cup and come fourth, but that's not a successful season. If I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be crying. But, you know, I can see Sanchez going, definitely end of season. I can see Ramsey even going, maybe. Oxide Chamberlain, I can see him going. I can see it being a massive clear out, regardless whether he stays or goes. But personally, I think he's got to go before the end of the season.
Fair point. Well, a team that got rid of their manager at the back end of last season, Chelsea, their 1-0 win over holders Man United was shrouded in controversy as referee Michael Oliver totally lost control of the game. Mikel, Chelsea fully deserved their win, mate, you know, on the balance of play, although the result probably would have been a lot different had Herrera kept his petulance in check. What do you make of the two yellow cards handed to him and the game in general?
Well, I personally think both fouls are yellow card fouls. Of course, we can always discuss whether someone who has a yellow card already should have a second yellow card for that second foul, but I'm sure if he hadn't had a yellow card already, he would have got it and no one would have said anything. I don't think he was very clever, the player, because when you have a yellow card, you have to be careful, you know, and the first foul, on Eden Hazard, when you watch it in slow-mo, you know, I've played myself, all those who have played themselves, we just know that Herrera knew what he was doing, and he wanted to get in, in and block the run of Eden Hazard. So of course it was a professional foul, and I would give a yellow card for that one. The second one was a foul for sure, it was in a situation where I would say it was a yellow card foul also. So I think it was correct to give him a red card, but I don't think he was very clever himself, the player, in those two situations.
I agree. It was a silly challenge to make, and let's be 100% honest, I think Mourinho got the game plan right at the beginning, in the sense that he knew that Chelsea had a lot of pace and power in the counter-attack. Hazard, Moses, Alonso, all these players, Willian, they could catch United because there isn't much pace in that United team. So I think the instructions were simple. Just break up play as much as possible, and also nullify the threat as our post, because he's obviously their most creative and major threat. And look, I'm of the old school in the sense that when United beat Arsenal in that 49 game, they clattered Reyes. That was the way to do it. That's just my mentality. And I know it's old school, but perhaps that's probably something they could have adopted, because it seemed that every foul that they conceded, it was soft. You know, they didn't go with much, I don't know, anger, vengeance. Yeah. You know what I mean? But again, obviously, the game has changed as we spoke about before. And, you know, pre-match, there's talk about United not having any strikers available. Yeah. Jones had injured, Wayne Rooney in training, Rashford was ill, Martial was injured, Ibrahimovic obviously suspended. You know, everything was blown apart when Rashford was named in the lineup. Now, he had a great chance to level the game. Should have scored.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Should have scored. Maybe in a few years, a little bit more experience. Keeper comes out, maybe he thinks it over him and this and that. He did extremely well to get there in the first place. I know, was it Luiz? He came out rushing and he beat Cahill easily. So he created the chance literally by himself. It's just disappointing that as a United fan, you know, you're 1-0 down against Chelsea with 10 men, golden opportunity. You take it and all that. But I thought you played well, Rashford, yesterday for someone who was supposed to be ill, you know, before the game. You know, he told Mourinho he wanted to play, which shows, you know, commitment. I thought he ran the line very well yesterday.
He did,
absolutely. And going back to the chance, yeah, he should have scored. But give credit to the keeper, Courtois, as well. He pulled off a great save. He didn't do nothing the whole game. So for his concentration and to pull that save was a good save as well.
I think you've got to give Cahill a bit of credit as well because he shoved him onto his wrong foot. You know, okay, fair enough. I had this discussion with Leon Knight earlier and I said to him, he should have scored, shouldn't he? He says, yeah, because any striker, any top-class striker should be using both feet. But other people will tell you something different. Mikel, as a former striker yourself, should he have buried that chance?
Well, I mean, of course, when you're one-on-one, you would like to say that a striker has to score. And yes, he could and he should have scored in this game, and then it would have been a different game maybe. But then again, you know, sometimes it's like so small things that decides in those situations. You know, I think I agree that what he did to get in that position was absolutely top class, because he still has to run more than half a length of the pitch. He has to out dribble one of the best defenders in the game, which he did very well. And then, of course, he was up against one of the best goalkeepers in the game. That of course doesn't make it easy also for a striker to score, because I mean he's massive. This Courtois, and of course he comes out really well, and he knows exactly where he would probably put it. You know, the only thing I would say is, why don't more strikers chip the balls in those kind of situations? I remember myself. I remember when I played with Michael in the national team, and we trained sometimes. And I remember one of the things that probably one of the only things that Michael hated, and he just couldn't do anything against it, he kept saying, was when a striker chips you, you can't do anything, because you never expect the striker to do it. You actually think you'll always hit it hard, so you go down, and then if he chips it, it's difficult to save those kind of finishes. So I don't understand why no more strikers chip the goalkeepers in today's game. But okay, it's easy to say, you know, but that's my opinion anyway.
So what's your take on Rashford anyway? Because I mean, many believe he's the real deal, while others, myself included, you know, guilty as charged, feel he's a bit one-dimensional, a bit predictable, relies too much on his pace.
I think it's a good striker. I think his problem right now is he doesn't get a lot of starts, because I mean it's not easy being a striker, never knowing when you're going to play. You lack rhythm. You lack play practice. You know, of course, the neutral supporter would probably say yes, but you have to always be ready when you play in a big club. You know, but we know all of us that if you play week in and week out, you have the rhythm and you play your best football. Rashford right now, he never knows when he's going to play. He's 100% behind Ibrahimovic, and then when he plays, then he has to be world class. No, I think he's a good player. I think he's still young. I think he can still learn things. But when I look at the way he created that chance yesterday, I have to give him some credit also and say that he has quality. You know, but he's not world class. But I think he's very good and who knows how good he can become. But he needs to play, of course. And right now he's not playing enough for his own liking, I'm sure. So it's always one of them, you know. Should he then try to move club to play more, or should he stay in Man United? We have to see what's going to happen with Ibrahimovic next season. Will he stay? Will he go? If he goes, maybe then Rashford again has a chance to play. If he stays, maybe Rashford should try and see the move.
Yeah, Jay, I remember during the Euros, you were saying, you know, Rashford should have been given a chance. That opportunity, I mean, you take that aside, as Yannick has said, he had a very good game. He led the line. He's got a lot of pace. You know, close control is very good. Only thing is, I mean, you've seen yourself at Liverpool, youngsters that come through don't necessarily make the grade. You know, just because they're from the academy doesn't mean they're going to be any good, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm a massive Rashford fan. I just think that he's not really had much of it. He was, like, doing really well at the end of last season. He had a run in the team. Confidence was high. Once he scored one goal, he was on form, on fire. And then Mourinho's come in, and Mourinho's renowned for not giving youngsters a chance. Personally, I think, you know, if it stays like that at the end of the season, he might need to go on loan to a mid-table team to get some games, because I think he's the real deal. Honestly, do he's got frightening pace. He's proven himself last season that teams can't cope with his pace, his unpredictability. I just think that. Well, the way Man United play, it's all about Ibra at the minute, you know. And then he's got a still fit Rooney in, you know. And it's just going to be hard to get in the team really permanently. But, like, you know, it's like Klopp's having at the minute. If you're good enough, though, Klopp will play you. But Mourinho seems to be a bit more cautious and a bit more, you know, he likes the experience. But last night, I did think that there was only going to be one result because Man United had so many key players out, which I wanted United to beat Chelsea to make the title a bit more interesting. I thought it might, like, sort of knock Chelsea's momentum. But no, Rashford, I rate him highly. I think he's going to be score a lot of goals for England. Given the chances, he'll score a lot of goals for United as well.
The thing is, he's played 31 games this season. Okay, fair enough. He hasn't started a lot of them. And let's be 100% honest, he's not going to be the central striker. Ibrahimovic has come in, he scored over 20 goals. A lot of people, well, should I say pundits or experts, felt he weren't even going to get 20 goals. And he's on 26 at the moment, yeah, or something like that, you know, which is phenomenal. You know, so he's not going to be a star as a central striker. But the one thing I've noticed about Mourinho, he's playing the likes of Martial and Rashford out wide and Lingard out wide because he wants to see what they can do in terms of
other position.
Yeah, not just other position, but how hard they will work for the team. You know, I think that's the problem that we had with Martial at the beginning of the season, in the sense that his lack of interest wasn't there. He didn't want to track back, but now he's getting the games. He's tracking back. But as we mentioned before, Rashford was outstanding last night. He was doing the donkey work. Yeah. And I think Mourinho wants him to learn his trade, so to speak. Not just to be an out-and-out striker, to have more to his game.
How can you not learn from Zlatan and Rooney? You know, so, you know, him going on loan or maybe seeking another club, that's not going to happen. Eventually, Rashford will cement his place in the team. Yes, it's not going to be this season because Zlatan's coming. Even if Zlatan stays for another year, Rashford eventually will move into that central, you know, central line as such to speak. Because if you hear, you know, I watch MUTV a lot and this and that. The younger players are learning a lot from your Rooneys, your Carricks, your Ibrahimovic, especially the front men like Martial and Rashford. If you're not going to learn from Zlatan Ibrahimovic, you've got no chance.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, they're learning a lot from him and they're taking that into the game. And especially, like you said, with Martial and Rashford playing out wide, the more positions they learn to learn on the pitch, the better they'll become over a period of time in their career. So I think Rashford's got a bright future at United.
And the thing is, that the perfect example is Wayne Rooney. Okay, you know, 250 goals, 152 goals for United, the club record goal scorer. Would Wayne Rooney have got those goals had he have not learned from the likes of Solskjaer, Van Nistelrooy, Henrik Larsson, all these other Carlos Tevez, all these players he's played alongside? I doubt it. So, you know, there's a long way to go for Rashford. He's probably got another 15 years in his career, if not longer. So let's see. Anyway, let's move on, shall we? And you know, Frank Lampard reckons Kante is the best midfielder in the world. Gents, do you agree, Jay?
Best midfielder in the world. That's a strong statement. I didn't hear that. When did Lampard say it? Last night?
After the game, yeah.
Yeah, I turned it off after that. but that's a massive statement, isn't it? Maybe on form, he don't get enough credit, but will he ever win, like, the Ballon d'Or, whatever, the new title of it? Will he ever win you know, I don't think he will, because midfielders tend to not, do they? He didn't score enough goals. But my opinion, he'd walk into any team in Europe. But whether he's the best in the world, that's a massive statement, isn't it? But no, don't get me wrong, he's helped Chelsea. He's been, you know, he proved it at Leicester one season. He was, for me, the player of the season, not Vardy and not Mahrez, you know. He consistently, you know what you get from him. You get 9 out of 10. And Whereas Mahrez and Vardy, it's proved this season, Leicester, they've gone hiding and now they sacked Ranieri and the players have all come out for Shakespeare and come out in the press and training's better. But with Kante, I think he just wanted to just, you know, move on from Leicester. You could probably see it coming. He is a quality player. He reminds me a bit of Claude Makélélé.
That's right. Mikel, what do you make of Kante, of Lampard's comments about him? Is he the complete midfielder? Because I mean, you see the likes of Toni Kroos and Luka Modric, Vidal the other day, even Xabi Alonso, who's going to retire at the end of the season. How highly do you rate Kante?
No, I think he's a very good player. But to go as far to say he's the best in the world, I'm pretty surprised about that, because I think you have to achieve more over a longer period to get that kind of title. I think Kante is a good player, but let's not forget it's only 2 years ago he was playing in the French first division for Caen. So I think it takes a bit more time to become the best in the world. He's playing right now for Chelsea and doing really well, and we could see it yesterday that he has an incredible importance for them. But I still think there's more, you know, many more players in the world who have achieved more than him in their careers and can maybe be called the world's best or some of the world's best. Kante's on a good track. He doesn't play every game for the French national team. You know, he plays, but he doesn't always play. So I think, it's for me, it's a bit funny because, it's the same as, I've been watching English football from since I was a little boy. I've played myself over in England. I still think that the English tend to call the Premier League the best league in the world, although I don't think it is, because, of course, when we look at the Europa League and Champions League year after year, then we know that it's not the English teams that are finally winning those big European titles. But of course, it's the most mediatized league in the world, and it's the league that has the biggest TV deal. So of course, the clubs are the richest in the world. But I still don't think the best players in the world play in England, and I still don't think because a player plays a good game in the English Premiership that we can say he's one of the best in the world. I think sometimes English people should also try and watch, football outside England, Spanish, whatever, German football, and I think they will understand that there are other leagues than the English league. The English league is a good league, but because you are good in England, it doesn't mean you're the best in the world.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Absolutely. Personally, I think for me, it's Toni Kroos, best central midfielder. I think he's outstanding. His range of passing, his shooting, his vision. Who would you say?
Modric.
Well, he's different. He's different than Kante. I don't think we can compare the two. Yes, they play the same position, but Kante is he recuperates many more balls defensively than Kroos does. But Kroos' passing ability is second to none. Of course, I mean, Kante hasn't got that same passing quality as Kroos has.
Well, as you said,
Busquets on his day, when he's best, then I think he's incredible as well. There's lots of good ones, around.
I agree. I think it's spot on what you said in terms of, the two different types of players. If you want a defensive midfielder, I would actually go for Busquets over Kante, to be honest.
Yep.
His experience, and as you said, what he's won at Barcelona, you don't stay at a club like that for 10 years if you're not any good.
And there's Verratti as well.
Verratti's decent, yeah.
He's a good player as well.
Absolutely. So,
but we can say that Lampard, okay, what was Lampard's 6 or an 8 or even a 10 sometimes, but he was certainly one of the best in the world on his, central midfield position when he played. But he did it over many, many years also, and he did it year by year after year. So what I mean is, in my opinion, personal opinion, a world-class player is not made overnight, he's made over a longer period where he year by year, year after year, he shows that he can keep doing it. That for me, when you can start talking about world-class, and that's how
consistency,
I think, anyway.
Consistency, absolutely. And so, Arsenal meet Man City in the semis while Chelsea face Spurs. Now, gents, who's your pick to be the eventual winner? What about you? What do you reckon?
I want Tottenham to win.
You want Tottenham to win. Who do you think is going to win?
Tottenham got no chance.
I think Man City are going to win it.
City. Yeah.
I do. Yeah. I would have said if Kane's fit, Tottenham will do Chelsea, but I think Chelsea will beat Tottenham now if Kane's not fit.
Spurs can't play at Wembley anyway.
They don't win it.
They don't win it, yeah.
Never do Arsenal, to be fair. I think City will do Arsenal. And so I'm going for City to win it.
Even though Arsenal got the experience, come on now.
No, I'm still going for City.
Two FA Cups in 3 years.
I'm still going for
Wenger's
City.
Final year, maybe?
I think it's going to end as a disaster for one day, to be fair. Well, the Arsenal fans are hoping it's an Arsenal-Tottenham final and he beats Tottenham and he ends up leaving on a
high. Day in the sun.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The sun's setting up. Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen that way.
Mm-hmm. Jay, who do you think is going to win the FA Cup, mate?
Man City, I agree with Jan. Man City. I think Chelsea will get to the final. I think Arsenal will bottle it. Shock. I think Spurs will look a completely different side now about Harry Kane, honestly. I think the wheels will fall off. I really do. I think they build too much of a team around him and they haven't got an adequate replacement. Do you know what I mean? And I've just got this feeling Dele Alli's due an injury as well. I've got this feeling that he's going to for a silly challenge, get hurt and he'll be injured as well. You know, he's got a shade of Gazza in him, isn't he?
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, if Dele Alli gets injured, I'm going to change your name to Jay Stradamus.
You watch what happened now. You watch it. I would like Man City to, you know, I think Pep will have his players fired up for it, and I think they might edge it over. Depends what Chelsea's running is like. You know, anything can happen on these games, but I just think that personally, Arsenal will bottle it. Arsenal will, their big players will go missing. You know, they can see that they're on their holidays already, I think, some of them. I'm still in shock that they lost so badly against Bayern Munich. Like,
you don't want to let them forget, do you?
No. No, but come on, who loses a last 16 tie? You're 10-2 over two legs.
Arsenal.
but do you know what I mean, lads? It's like, it's embarrassing. You know, they're all just busy taking selfies in the changing rooms and that's all they're worried about.
Yeah, I think we can go on about Arsenal all night, to be fair, and mentality. Mikel, your tip for the FA Cup, who did you put your money on?
Chelsea all day long.
Chelsea, okay.
I think they have the best manager of all those teams, and I think he gets the best out of his players, and this year they are very consistent and they don't lose a lot of games, and I think he will find the perfect tactic both in the semi-final and in the final. So I would go for Chelsea if it was me.
So Chelsea to do the double Man City to take the FA Cup back to Manchester. Okay, I'm gonna go with City as well. I think they'll bully Arsenal. And
well, let them be beaten tomorrow against the Monaco.
Yeah, you know, yeah,
that'll be a different story. They'll have a lot to talk about, and then it'll maybe be a different story. Yeah.
That's right.
So I'll be in the stadium tomorrow in Monaco. I expect a big game.
Give us a wave while you're yeah. just wave.
Well, tomorrow for normally there's not a lot of people in the stadium, but tomorrow I think it's going to be sell out crowd, so it's maybe going to be a bit difficult to wake up.
Yeah. What a banner!
yeah,
get a banner.
Shoot the defense.
That's right.
Brilliant. No, that'd be impressive, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Should they just wear a little hand like waving?
Should have put us on the map.
Yeah.
Send me some clothes and a cap. Yeah.
Don't worry. I'll do that. I'll send yours as well, Jay. Don't worry.
Cheers.
that was the most. I don't want any of that crap you got.
Nah.
Please don't.
Oh, but right. Okay. Let's go into other news. Okay. So riddle me that. What happens when a Brazilian derby? What happens in a Brazilian derby when two players collide on the touchline? Well, if it's a Gama against Brasiliense match, then the answer you're looking for is carnage. Here's what happened in a nutshell. I'm going to try and do this as slow and as coherent as possible. Two players went up for a challenge. One of them ended up worse for wear. Players and staff on both teams then began to scrap on the touchline. While all this is happening, Gama fans invaded the pitch and attempted to rip a Brazilian flag. Yeah. Brazilian fans intervened and an impromptu tug of war ensued. This then led to a huge brawl with fans being chased on outside the ground, many of whom were spotted climbing fences to get out. That's what you kind of see in the Cypriot League as well.
Yeah.
Mikhail, I'm not sure if you've seen the incident, mate, but have you experienced anything like this in your career?
I haven't watched this clip, but we know that you know, in the last five, 10 years, the police have had lots of problems with the Brazilian football hooligans. Yeah, we know it's a problem in Brazil, and it's not the first time it's happened. Yeah, we know it's things that happens regularly in Brazil, and that's also why they say that there are really some high-risk football games for families and children to go and watch in Brazil. Yeah. But of course, those kind of things shouldn't happen. Of course, they shouldn't happen. But unfortunately, they still do, and probably also will keep happening. Yeah. So, but it's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy. It's not about football anymore. You know, those hooligans that go in there, they come to fight instead of watching the football game. You know, it's sad.
The strange thing about this whole thing is that this is what a friend told me, that the season hasn't started yet. So all it is, these are just pre-season friendlies, but they do it regionally.
Yeah.
So
it's like a Paulista league.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so every game is a derby game. So it's almost having a North London derby, a Manchester derby, a Liverpool derby, a North East derby, just as friendly games. It's bonkers. And you're going to get trouble.
Yeah, but what they do over in Brazil is they have two championships. They have the state championship, and then they have, of course, the big championship, which is the whole country. So of course, you can imagine the Sao Paulo state championship is there are some extremely strong clubs. Yeah, but also some smaller clubs, of course. But you know, like so like you say, there's you know, half of the year there's only derbies. Yeah, they're high risk. Yeah, for sure they're high risk.
I hate to see the police bill on that. Jay, a lot of the grounds in Brazil were built or redeveloped for the World Cup, mate. I mean, judging by what happened at the weekend, it doesn't look like they're being policed as they should.
No, it's not, is it? The only thing is, though, is I'm not sure. I'm not been to Brazil. I'm not been to one of the games. I watched a bit online, but I don't think the security is as good as what it is in England, is it? At games, anyway. Or like I said, I follow some of the it's like pre-season, like you were saying, but it's still like competitive, isn't it? It's like a mini league still. Because I look online on tables and that on the apps, so it's quite competitive, more free flowing football. But like you said, a lot of them are local derbies, so maybe they need to have a review of that. Maybe
that will happen to Brunith. It's all about the money, I guess. And everything, but it's remarkable because watching the clips, there's a coach or a physio, I don't know what he is, but he's having a go at six police officers, and one of them just like, you know what, sod this, and he gets the pepper spray and he's crazy for no reason, just for giving him mouth. I mean, they're just ruthless. They just do not care out there. It's unbelievable. And I think hasn't a Brazilian club signed the goalkeeper who killed his wife and fed her remains to the dog?
It's crazy.
It's unbelievable. Anyway, let's move on. Serie A. That seems less corrupt. And, anyway, Mario Cardi and Eva Banega, they each scored a hat-trick in Inter Milan's 7-1 win over Atalanta. You, my friend, are my Serie A or my European football expert, not James Richardson. You've got more hair than him. Inter, they've drastically improved under Pioli. I mean, he took charge in November.
Yeah.
I mean, this win takes them above Atalanta, moving them into fourth. Yeah. 6 points behind Roma. Do you think they can mount the title chance next season? Sorry,
I can if they get the right players. I mean, I think they've been in a transitional period for quite a while now. You know, since kind of Mourinho when they won the league.
Are you blaming Jose?
Did I ever? You know,
blame Rafa Benitez who came in and anyway.
Sorry. I was coming to him, but you know, beat me to it. They've chopped and changed managers every year. They haven't hit the heights as a big club like Inter should. But since Pioli's come in this season, he's been brilliant. You know, I think before they got beat by Juve, I think they won like 8 or 9 in a row. So players like Icardi, who probably fallen out with everybody, but he seems to got the best out of him. But Banega, he started off the season really poorly, but he's been back into the team and he's starting to produce. And it could be I mean, always in Italy, you can't see beyond Juve because, you know, I think if they win it, it's like 6 in a row or something like that. But Inter possibly with a couple of recruitments. Why not? Mm. You know, so.
Let's see.
Exciting times at Inter Milan.
Absolutely. And so Barcelona's 6-1 hiding off Paris Saint-Germain last week must have taken a lot out of the players as they slipped at the Riathor, losing 2-1 to Deportivo La Coruña. Now, Real Madrid, on the other hand, surprise, surprise, they ground out a 2-1 win against Betis at home with Sergio Ramos scoring the winner. That's his 10th of the season. I think he's got more than Wayne Rooney. Gents, Ramos has been criticised for his defensive ability, or inability, should I say, and his discipline. Now, he's come up with so many important goals over the years. Does he get the credit he deserves? Mikel, what do you reckon?
Well, I've always thought he was, if not the best defender in the world, then for sure one of the best. Yeah, I think he is good defensively, but of course I think he has something that no one else has, is that he's that good on offensive set pieces that it's just adds an extra dimension to his game. Yeah, I mean this season he scored the equaliser in Camp Nou. Mm-hmm. He scored the other day twice against Napoli away from home. Now he scored again in the weekend. During a period where Real Madrid are struggling somehow, you know, but he somehow seems to be able to score goals like anyone else, you know, going forward and if they finally becomes champion this season, then he's certainly one of the big winners of the season. I like him, and I think he's really, really good defensively also. I'm surprised that some people would question his defensive ability. Sometimes we could maybe say he's a little bit too he overdoes it maybe, or he's too aggressive in some situations. He gets some red cards also once in a while, yeah. But he's a real leader, and I've watched many games of him also live, and I've hardly seen a bad game. You know, he's so consistent.
Mm. Got the win against Depor as well.
Yeah.
I can't even remember all his goals.
All his goals. Sevilla.
Important goals.
Yeah.
He's a big character. And that's what you need, that club like that. You can't have anyone hiding away.
He's a leader, isn't he?
Exactly.
He's a real leader.
Yeah.
Look, Varane is a fantastic footballer, but he's no Sergio Ramos in terms of that, the personality.
No, he's not a leader, you know. He's a very good player. He has lots of qualities, but you know, he's not the one that shouts. He's not the one that bosses the others, you know. He's for me, he's not a captain, personality. Although he's the captain for the French national team, but I'm also pretty surprised about that. But anyway, you know, but he's a good player. He's not Sergio Ramos. Sergio Ramos is the best.
He's got that intimidating factor about him, doesn't he? Yeah. You know, when strikers, you know, maybe a 50-50 challenge, they look at Ramos and I feel, oh, I'm going to back out of that, you know, because it's Ramos.
And if Ramos isn't there, then you've got Pepe.
Pepe. So someone's going to get you.
Jay, what do you make of Sergio Ramos? I know he was linked with United a couple of seasons ago, 70-odd million pounds, then he signed that new contract, which obviously a lot of people said, you know, he was using United as a way of getting that new contract. But let's be 100% honest, mate, he's worth every penny, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's one of the greatest centre-backs in the world, isn't he? He's always in the World 11 teams. He's been very loyal to Madrid now since he joined them. And I think he'd walk into any team. You know, I'd love to have him at Liverpool. He's a warrior, isn't he? You know, if you've got a bloody nose or an injury, he tries to carry on and play through the pain barrier. I think he's the sort of player who Mourinho needs at the minute at Man United. Liverpool need him. You know, I think any Premiership team would walk into, when, let's be honest.
Absolutely. And I think the Zidane effect has got something to do with it, because it just seems that he's given him that added responsibility. Obviously, you know, Ronaldo is a senior figure, Benzema is a senior figure, but then when you've got a lot of youngsters like Carvajal's there, you know, you've got Isco in the team, they need these other players to galvanise them. You know, Bale's there as well, he's pretty young. So, again, having someone like Sergio Ramos, who's won World Cups, who's won Champions League, who's won, you know, La Liga, you know, he's a fantastic footballer. And say whatever you want about his disciplinary record, I think he's been an absolute professional this season. But now I say this, he's probably going to get sent off at the weekend.
That won't be surprising with his track record, isn't it? Getting sent off.
Exactly.
Was it 19 times or something he's been sent off in his career?
Yeah.
Something silly like that?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. But hey, what can you do?
Vinny Jones go home, yeah.
That'll be an interesting one, wouldn't it? Vinny Jones against, wow, can't if you only had a time machine. No. Well, gents, that's it for our show this evening. I'd just like to thank Mikhail and Jay for coming on the show. It's been great to have you guys back on. Or should I say, Mikhail, your debut show. Before I let you go, Mikhail, would you like to give our listeners a brief rundown as to what you're doing at the moment? Because as I said before, you're a football agent at the moment. You're in Monaco. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going really well. Yeah, like I said before. It's taken me a good 10-15 years to build up this company, and things are moving on really, really quickly, and I'm really fortunate to be working with some of the best in the game, and I'm enjoying every day, and I can't wait to continue.
Brilliant. And have you got anything to say to Middlesbrough fans and Derby fans at the moment? They're not having two good seasons out there.
Well, I mean, Middlesbrough back again in the Premier League, and I'm really, really happy for them and for the area that they are back where they belong. Of course, this season is not an easy season, but I still believe strongly, and I really hope that they will stay up at the end of the season. They deserve it, and I keep my fingers crossed for them. Yeah, maybe one day I might be lucky to put one of my players in Middlesbrough. That'll be nice.
Fantastic. Brilliant. And Jay, you've been a busy gent the past couple of weeks, or since we last spoke.
So at the minute, we've got lots of PAs going on with our clients. We've got one in Nubu coming up in Birmingham with Sam Rees and Harriet from X on the Beach. Then we've got the IB for Weekenders, a tour and all over the UK. Got some exciting TV projects. Did this work with Zlatan, actually. That was amazing a couple of weeks ago. That we did a photo shoot and TV commercial for his clothing brand AZ Sportswear, and our body double Jack, who's obviously been on, he was in awe. You know, it's the first proper time we got to spend time with Zlatan, and he was really nice. I got to meet him, got a photo and got some autographs, and he's just crazy. Zlatan, the real Zlatan. He reminds me of Cantona when I met Cantona. He's just I got to say, as a football fan, he's just funny as well. He's just such a funny guy, you know. I can see why he's loved by Man United fans.
Fantastic. Well, what about Essex TV? I don't really know too much about that at the moment.
Yeah. So at the minute, Essex TV, the offer's still on the table. I'm a director at the minute. So a creative director, but there's lots of opportunities there. We've got them trying to expand the sports channel, actually, which is something Shoot the Defence could get involved in. You know, there's lots of opportunities. You know, it's not people, because the plan is long term to change it from Essex TV to ETV. You know, to shorten it because they don't just cover teams or subjects in Essex. You know, they cover all over England, all over the world. But the plan is, that I know their long-term goal is to change it from Essex TV to ETV and then obviously to go on to Sky. They're still waiting for the licence and to push it all through. But it's exciting times. They get a massive online, you know, subscribership. They get lots of viewers who read their articles and to watch their programmes. And it's definitely something like Shoot the Defence would be a great asset to join, you know, to do collaboration or to work together. It's definitely something we want to try and get working. You know, I don't know how long it will take, but... I've mentioned it to the CEO, and we'll see what we can do.
Fantastic. There you go. We're doing something. We're doing something right. We're doing something right. Cheers, Jen. Nice one. Well, look, guys, before I let you guys go, Twitter handles. Mikhail, you're on Twitter at Beck Mikhail. Is that right?
Yeah, Beck Mikhail, yeah.
Wonderful. Excellent. And Jay?
Yeah, it's Lucky7PR. And then my private one is J7Austin. My main one, Lucky7PR.
Excellent, wonderful. You can follow us guys at Shoot the Defence if you're not doing that already. Why not? Follow our friends MySportsWear at MySportsWear1 and our friends over at the FNX Network at FNX Network. And that's it for this week. Really appreciate your time for listening and watching. We'll be back soon. Take care.
Cheers, guys.